This is As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the show where we bring you the stories behind the stories that matter in your life. We'll tell you something maybe you didn't know, hear from the experts, authors, and others, and hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. But in every case, we call it As We See It. On today's show, we are going to talk monkeys and beer. And you'll hear from a guy that was 7 days away from his execution after spending thousands of days on death row. His story and how he got out, coming up a little later. Let's meet the friends. Jennifer Bjorklund is in the newsroom.
Well, that sick American doctor isn't the only one from those Ebola-stricken countries who wants in to the U.S. now.
Jay Capadotia has the day off in his place. It's a man we'll bring you up to speed on in a little bit. It's the insane Daryl Wayne.
And we're going to talk about Facebook going down on Friday. I mean, way down.
Way down.
Way down.
In charge of global equity today, it's Chris Martin.
Phil, we often talk about the glass ceiling that women face out in the workforce, and now there's a study that could show one industry as a major culprit.
All right, very good. We'll learn what that is. And thanks for tuning in today. Let's get things started. Jennifer, you're first. Remember last week you said Ebola is coming to America.
Right.
And how far along that path are we already?
Well, Ebola landed in that sick doctor. The poor guy, he's an American who's been working with the folks in Africa, and he's improving here in the U.S. His name is Dr. Kent Brantley, and they were kind of surprised. He was able to walk with help from an ambulance after he was flown to Atlanta over the weekend, where he's being treated in isolation. And his wife says he's doing a little bit better. So that's good news. Good news for him. But listen to this. I saw this report leaked by the Border Patrol on who's sneaking into the U.S. on the southern border. It was
who's
leaked
sneaking,
to Breitbart.
Who's sneaking into the U.S. at the southern border?
People
I just felt
from,
like I had to ask.
Who do you think? People from the three countries hit the hardest by Ebola among those coming here through Mexico. And they say at least on their list, 71 people from, I'm going to just coin a term here. I'm going to call it the Ebola triangle of those three countries. They've been caught at the border since the first of the year. 71 people. So, you know, something to think about.
Why are they coming here, to infect us or to get cured?
I think they're coming here because they don't have it and they don't want it. That's my.
They're leaving the Ebola countries to come here where we don't have it yet.
Right.
But they may have it on their satchels or something as they walk in, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, sneaking in on the border. Now, of course, we have flights coming in from Sierra Leone. We have flights, you know, from all over Africa every day of the year. So this isn't that alarming. It's just, you know, that border, you always kind of have to keep an eye on who's coming up through Mexico.
And we're not trying to stir up any kind of undue craziness about this Ebola thing, are we? Is it a real threat yet? Do we need to be worried? Or does the CDC have things under control?
Well, here's one thing that is a little bit frightening and then at the same time comforting about Ebola. It has a long incubation period, like maybe 20, 21 days. So you can have it for 3 weeks and be asymptomatic. The good news about that is that during that.
The media is building it up a little bit, though, wouldn't you say?
I think so. People like Jennifer like to do that.
Yeah.
Because
she's a main. Yeah, it's my fault.
Is it?
She's the main reason.
Oh, it's my fault. There are 500 people dead from a disease that makes you bleed out of your whole face.
See, I thought you tripped on the incubator there a moment ago. So reel back just a moment. You were about to tell us exactly what happens with this incubation period.
Well, what happens is it for 21 days, it's in your system and it doesn't. You're not infectious during those 21 days. So that's the good news. If it were the other way around, where you could be infected for 21 days and not know it and still be spreading it, then I think we'd have a real, real public health scare on our hands.
Well, I just saw at CVS that Ebola test kit.
Oh, they
yesterday. Right. Yeah, they jumped right on this thing.
You know, don't laugh, because they say they're going to have a vaccine within a few months.
Well, that'll be good, because we only have 21 days.
I'm going to wait for a whole bunch of other people to get that vaccine first and see how they do.
You know, the world would have been a much different place, Jennifer, had you turned to a world of crime when you were an active anchorwoman on the television. But you have a similar situation to relate to us today, don't you?
I do. And this is kind of mind-boggling. I know, being a person on TV, you can't even get upset with someone at a gas station without someone blogging about it because you're recognizable. But a morning news anchor at the Fox station in Sacramento has been arrested on charges of grand theft, burglary, and conspiracy. Her name is Sabrina Rodriguez. She turned herself into Sacramento police after store employees at the Coach Outlet store in Folsom recognized her from the news.
Oh.
Yeah, they say she stole or helped an accomplice steal 10 wallets worth $2,500. Her lawyer, though, says she's 100% innocent, which kind of wasn't OJ 100% not guilty? Is that different or is that the same?
It's a little different because OJ wasn't able to report the breaking news about his arrest.
I know. Well, meantime, that's not all. Her problems don't stop there. Her fiance is also in jail on arson and drug charges. This is an unrelated case because in May, they had a fire at their house. They said they thought the stove exploded. And at the time, firefighters say they were lucky to get out of the house alive. A few months later, the fiance is arrested on charges of arson, battery, manufacturing meth, possession of marijuana, or hashish for sale. So he's in the pokey, too. And they haven't really said if the charges are linked to the fire on May 6th, but I'm thinking maybe they kind of might be.
Well, I mean, he must be sloppy because I watched 65 episodes of Breaking Bad and they never blew anything up with the cooking. All went okay.
Right.
I'm guessing that he's not a big scientist. No. You know,
one of my favorite. He's not one of my favorite movies though. The Pokey 2 was something else. You should see that if you have a chance. Put it on your Netflix. And you mentioned exploding there a moment ago. There's another interesting explosion story that you have for us, Jennifer. What happened?
Yeah, it's in New Jersey. A vat of eggnog exploded.
That's damaged all you have to tell me. I'm there. I'm done.
Well, but this is just mind-boggling. Okay, so eggnog, all it is, well, egg yolks and
egg
milk
and
cream. And yeah, egg and nog and hopefully some booze. Well, I don't know what a vat of eggnog is doing exploding, except for the fact that it's being developed in a pharmaceutical plant. Mixing artificial eggnog flavorings, the two workers were when this explosion happened, because they were trying out a new eggnog recipe.
Yeah.
Okay. It blew off the rear of the three-story plant, the whole backside of the building, glasses all over the street. The company, they say, makes supplies, ingredients for food, beverages, other products. And this is why I like to make my own food at home from real ingredients, because anything that's going to explode in a fire, in a chemical fire, in a pharmaceutical plant, I don't want to be cheering, toasting the Christmas with.
So the eggnog fondue pot is out.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Hey, with this voice that you're listening to, Daryl Wayne, in case you don't know, reel your brain back to when you had a memory, to the 1970s and 80s on KROQ in Burbank and Pasadena.
Pasadena, yeah.
Pasadena, and it was Burbank after you left, wasn't it?
It was Burbank before and afterward.
It was Burbank originally, when
it was AM, it was on Magnolia.
Right.
And then they moved into that Daltz building afterward there in Burbank.
Yeah, near the
it's
airport.
McCormick and Schmick's now.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So the insane Daryl Wayne, famed disc jockey from KROQ from the 70s and some 80s, and he's here today. In fact, you're here because you stay up to speed on social media. I see you on Facebook all the time, and I think if there was a moment in time where I couldn't see you on Facebook, I'm pretty sure I would not call the authorities. But
yeah, I'd be locked in a trunk of a car somewhere, or there'd be an issue. Yeah.
But police in La Crescenta were a little miffed by the way people reacted to this recent outage at Facebook, right?
They were upset. I mean, first of all, what happened was Facebook went down for about 20 minutes,
uh-oh,
right? And so people were panicking, and they were calling 911, right, and reporting this. And the people in the police department in La Crescenta decided that the way that they were going to dispel the situation was they went on Twitter and tweeted to people to not to panic, that this was not a reportable incident or emergency. And by the way, they had no idea when Facebook was coming back up, as if they would be the source of that information anyway.
They couldn't help. Save your 911 calls for when somebody doesn't put pepperoni on your pepperoni pizza. Yeah.
But I mean, at K-Rock, you mentioned K-Rock, from April 19th through the 22nd of 1977, I had been chief engineer for 20 days. We were off the air for 3 days.
Wow.
3 days.
Did anybody call 911?
No.
Good.
Not a one of them.
I don't think we had that back then, frankly.
I think we lost $22, but Facebook figured had lost $426,607 as a result of being down for 19 minutes.
Wow.
That's what they get for 19 minutes of advertising.
That's beer money. Yeah. That's beer money for Zuckerberg.
And some.
All right. Hey, you are in for a treat because we have so much to talk about on today's program, including something that you'll hear special from Jennifer Bjorklund coming up in our next segment. But also, Chris was talking about the glass ceiling for women. And wait until you hear which industry perhaps is the roughest on women here in Southern California for the most part. Not exclusively, but for the main part, it's here. And you're going to hear that and more when we return on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Thanks for tuning in to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends here on KFWB News Talk 980. I'm Phil. Jennifer Bjorklund is here. Chris Martin is here. Jay Capadonia has the week off. He's up in Lake Tahoe, which is an interesting connection to our guest co-host today, the insane Daryl Wayne, who also, I believe, aside from being one of the regular DJs, runs the joint at KTHO, K-Tahoe, up in the beautiful town.
I'm the owner dude.
The owner dude?
The owner dude.
Isn't that similar to owning the joint?
Yeah, pretty much.
Runs the joint.
Yeah, runs the joint, owns the joint, yeah. Writes the checks.
Do you also like rum runners? Because that's Jay's favorite part about Tahoe.
Rum runners.
I don't even know what that means.
I think it's mango and about a half gallon right. of vodka and
different types of rum all mixed together.
And a dollop of yogurt. I don't know what
radio
it is.
Drove me to sobriety 29 years ago.
Okay.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know what? Getting edged out of a good gig could drive you to drink too, Chris.
It sure could. There's a study out of USC's Media Diversity and Social Change Initiative, which sounds very important. That women continue to be vastly underrepresented between 2007 and last year. So they evaluated 25,000 speaking characters in 600 of the top grossing films from the last few years. And women were most represented in comedies. There was about a third of women speaking parts in comedies. So you could think of like The Heat or Bridesmaids, which were very funny movies. But they were represented least in action films. So, like, you want to think of, like, those Marvel films, The Avengers and Star Trek and The Hobbit. They're only about 20% of women get a part in those films. And top-grossing movies, it's behind the cameras where women struggle most because only 7% of top-grossing movies were directed by women. So apparently the major barrier is that males fund and greenlight most of the movies. Though proponents say directors have to be aggressive, like a general leading troops into battle, so it might not be suited to a woman's natural inclinations.
Well, get this. Maybe we're going to help here because isn't there a redux of a famous movie and it might be recast?
It's Ghostbusters 3 with an all-female cast coming along.
No kidding.
Yeah. Melissa McCarthy has been named as someone that will likely come up. She's been directed by Paul Feig in The Bridesmaids and The Heat, and he's the one that's headed toward Ghostbusters 3.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's like Charlie's Angels, except with tanks on their back.
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
And will they bring the Doughboy back? Or will it be the Dough Girl?
And Slime.
Slime.
It brings a whole new meaning to the
yes,
green slime.
Come on.
Yeah, something they put in their hair.
So she's going to be the Bill Murray character. Who's going to play Dan Aykroyd?
It's like a, there's something about Mary reference.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that where you were going with that?
Okay, no, I wasn't, but okay. I'm glad you did.
Right. Okay. Hey, all right, let's pull this rig right into the ditch and change, because we have a couple of quick little obits to do here. And this first one, Daryl, goes back to the Ronald Reagan era.
Yeah, and James Brady.
Yeah, and the gun control lobby is probably talking about this a great deal today.
I'm sure that they are. He was 73 years old. He was permanently disabled when he was shot along with Ronald Reagan back in 1981, I believe.
I believe you're right. And another obit to mention, venerable newscaster, anchorman from Channel 4 here in Los Angeles, Jess Marlowe. Was 84 years of age.
Button-down guy.
He sure was, and he was something. But he had that kind of if you look carefully at him, you could see a smirk on his face.
He was snarky.
You know, he had a sense of humor, but he wasn't going to let in on it anytime soon. And Jennifer Bjorklund worked with Jess Marlowe briefly, because she was coming in as he was going out. I think they met a couple of times. And Jennifer?
Yeah. I met him a couple times in the newsroom when he'd come back to say hi to people, you know, because he retired, I think, back in 2003.
What was your impression of the guy?
Oh, just a great, great guy. Just witty and charming. And I had asked around, like, you know, Jess Marlowe's coming and you got to meet him. You're going to love him. And I'm like, yeah, he doesn't want to meet me. He'll love you. Got to meet him. He's such a nice man. The ladies loved Jess Marlowe. And one of my compadres in the newsroom said, he just smells so good. And I said, what does that even mean? You know, I hate cologne. I'm not going to go say hi to some guy just to sniff his cologne. She says, no. You'll see when you meet him. So I walk over, I say hello, and he just has this breeze of fresh air, fresh manly scent blowing around him. He just smells like a clean load of laundry and just a positive, happy guy. I mean, I really got a really good impression from him just from a short couple of visits that we had. So, yeah.
Okay.
Human Febreze.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm
going
to start
sticking
dryer sheets in my pockets.
Yeah.
Some people do change the air in a room, and I think, you know, he was one of those people.
All right. How about that? Jess Marlowe, a breath of fresh air. For Southern California News. Again, dead at the age of 84. Now, Chris, I know you've been waiting. You cannot wait to get some sports in. It's been a couple of shows since you've actually had some focus on sports, and you have a couple
of stories.
I've
got to showcase my wares, Phil.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Where's are they? Go ahead.
Well, Team USA, the basketball team for Team USA, they're on their journey to the FIBA Basketball World Cup tournament. This is international. They play international play. They do when the NBA season's over. It tips off on August 30th in Spain, but they had this scrimmage in Las Vegas over the weekend. And in the fourth quarter, a lot of you have probably already seen the video. Paul George flies past the rim, long legs straight out, and his right leg smashes into the goalpost stanchion straight on. He snaps his tibia fibula, and it comes poking out of the skin, just like that Kevin Ware fracture that we might remember from Louisville. Yeah, you remember that?
Oh, so it came right out, poked right out of the skin, and there it is. And they blocked it on television.
Fracture.
The quickest pullback in television history.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nasty. Or remember that Anderson Silva fight, if you watch MMA, where he tried to kick a guy in the leg, and his went the opposite direction.
That was hard to watch, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you mentioned, football is, there's always the football guy with the knee going in one direction, he's going the other direction.
Yeah, his name's Joe Theismann.
Which direction are the Buffalo Bills going?
Okay, there was a you got it, man. The Buffalo Bills, they're up for sale. We talked about that last week, and Donald Trump stepped in. He made an offer. He said, I'll give you $1 billion, all cash, no contingencies, and I'll have the check in an hour. Unfortunately, the ownership group put it back out for bid, unfortunately for the Donald. So now it's between him, John Bon Jovi and his group, and a group led by Buffalo Sabres owner Jerry Pegula, who apparently offered $1.3 billion.
his group.
I just can't see living on a prayer being a theme for those guys.
No, but that's what is going to happen. I mean, the fans of the Bills don't want Bon Jovi because there was an inkling that he would move it north to Toronto.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that Donald Trump's not going to do the same thing. And Donald Trump probably more has his eye on a place like L.A.
But they get Rob Ford that way.
Right, exactly. Wouldn't that be great?
They don't need cheerleaders. They could just put him out there.
Yeah, they could get five espressos, or as as Mayor Ford would say, expressos in one cup.
Yeah.
The jewel of Canada.
Yeah, that's right. So, Jen, this is something that Rob Ford might have done when he was a kid.
When he was a kid? What are you talking about? He probably did this last weekend.
All right, tell us. What is it?
So a couple of 17-year-old boys have been charged with breaking into a house. This is in Pennsylvania, and baking some pot brownies. Yep.
They needed a kitchen?
I guess so. You know, that. I mean, look, a couple of guys did this in my home ec class when I was in junior high or in high school, I remember. And, you know, nobody noticed except for a couple of the students. But, yeah, this burglary happened last month, but the department only recently started talking about it. They said the boys were found with drug paraphernalia, more than 2 pounds of the unspecified drug used to make the brownies. So I wonder if they did it right and did the butter, or if they were just, you know.
Yeah, got to go full butter. Full butter. Right. Get the right amount of sugar.
Yeah.
What you got to do is you got to go get tips from Jen on how to make a good brownie, because this lady knows
right.
How to make
I can
a
make
good
the brownies.
Brownie.
I don't like, know listen. How to put the questionable ingredients in, although I can Google that stuff on the internet.
Well, we'll catch up with you on that on another day.
The Google machine.
Jen. Hey, imagine spending more than 8,000 days on death row, knowing you did not commit the crime, and sitting there, sweating, waiting for the results of a DNA test that just might exonerate you. The author of the book, 7 Days to Live, joins us live next on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends, right here on KFWB News Talk 980. So glad you tuned in to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends. We have a website. It's philhewlettandfriends.com. Isn't that convenient? On that website, you get not only links to the books of the authors and others who are on this program, but you also get links to interesting and exciting events. You also get the show fun page, where I do recommend you go look. There's always something interesting in there. We try to add something every day and hope to talk about it on the program today as well. Before we went to the break, we talked about what it would be like to be on death row and knowing that you did not commit the crime. It's probably not a unique situation, but in this day and age, we have the science, we have the technology to decide these things absolutely as to whether somebody has committed the crime. If you cannot place their DNA at the scene of the crime, then there's no way they could have committed it.
Well, they say that everyone on death row is innocent, but it's probably true for some people, like the guest.
And joining us live is a man who spent 21 years of his life in prison for a crime he did not commit. He's the author of the book 7 Days to Live. We want to hear this story, at least as much of it as we can get in a short period of time. Nick Yaris joins us now. Nick, hello.
Hello, young man.
Oh, thank you. What were you accused of and ultimately charged with?
Well, to put context in it, my life as a juvenile first unraveled because of what happened to me as a young man. I was attacked as a 7-year-old boy, and I had my head beat in, and I became addicted to drugs and alcohol in the aftermath of all that chaos in my life. And as a young man, I was a drug addict and a car thief. And one night while I was in a car driving through the city of Chester, Pennsylvania, I was pulled over by a police officer. And we had a scuffle, during the scuffle, the gun went off into the ground, and the officer then put me into his car, and he charged me with attempted murder and kidnapping of the police officer, and I fell apart while I was in prison, and I stupidly involved myself in my own folly by reading a newspaper article about a murder, and I told the police that I might know something about it, so stupidly, as a 20-year-old drug addict, they knew I was lying. And then they turned around and decided that they would then make the case fit against me by having a man say that I confessed to him by only being in the cell next to him for one night.
Convenient now, for the prosecutors. Now they have somebody to pin on the crime and they could close the book.
And more importantly, the man had been convicted of burglarizing the prosecutor's home who was prosecuting me. My own undoing came in the series of events after my arrest, because you have to understand, Linda Mae Craig was a 33-year-old woman who was working in Delaware across the state line of Pennsylvania in December 15th, 1981.
This is the victim.
At 4.05 p.m., she was abducted in the car park, and she was knocked out of her shoes in the parking lot, and her car was driven 2 miles into Pennsylvania, where she was then raped and stabbed and dumped in a church parking lot 2 miles from her home. I lived in Philadelphia, 26 miles away, but even though I had a bank receipt showing I was in a bank at 3.05 p.m. and I was in a shopkeeper's store after the events, that the police said I could have made it out there and did the crime and came home, changed clothes, and was at dinner with my family, and then was in a store across the street from my house in 25 minutes in 26 miles during rush hour traffic.
Wow.
But that, you have to understand.
Not possible.
Well, they made it possible by overriding the jury with the sensationalism that took place. Hmm. See, I went to trial in 1982 of April for the original charges against Officer Benjamin Wright of kidnapping and attempted murder, and I was found not guilty by a jury after only 20 minutes of deliberation. When that happened, the prosecutor took it as a personal slight against his career, and the very next week he demanded the death penalty against me in this crime, even though no facts in the murder case had changed.
Is he an elected official? A DA?
His name is Barry Gross. He's now retired from the federal prosecutor's office, and he was before Robert R. Kelly, who also handled the murder trial. And when I went to trial for murder, and by the way, this is a key fact and a very cogent fact, I was charged as a psychological deviant. See, they made up a pop psychology motive for why I would go out and kill this woman. They said that she bore a likeness to my 20-year-old girlfriend, whom I recently broke up with. Therefore, as a spurned lover, I went out and killed a total stranger in rage. And so I was treated with this word deference to the utmost. And I'm sorry, but after I would be stabbed by another prisoner or strangled, it was the professional who treated me with deference that made it really unappealing to recount, because they didn't care for me. They saw me, the nurses saw me as a predator upon them, and they treated me even worse.
Hmm. And some, Nick, I want to skip a little a bit ahead here, again, because we only have a certain amount of time, and I know you're passionate about this story, and who can blame you? But there were plenty of crazy moments in jail that you write about in the book, including these gladiator-style fights between inmates. Can you just give us a little thumbnail of what was happening there? And were you one of the gladiators?
Yes, twice. After I was sent to Huntington Prison, which has now been shut down, one of the hardest prisons on the East Coast, it was only the one prison condemned by the United Nations for active practices of torture, and one of which was silence, keeping prisoners silent. And the second one was, after a while, the guards used to pick out a prisoner of white and a prisoner black and make them fight, because in the crack epidemic of the 80s, so many prisoners were coming to the prisons that they had to have new guards come up from the cities into these mountains. And the black guards didn't get on with black prisoners being beat down by white guards. So they had a style of settling the matter by picking two men out and making them fight for about 8 minutes.
And you were in, you say, two of these fights. And how did that how did that work out?
Well, you just get, someone comes to your door and says, Yaris, you're up, and that's it. You're out there and you know the rules. Nothing has to be explained to you. You've seen enough of it. And what you do is you go in the cage, you take your handcuffs off, and you wait. You be the gentleman, because the man against you has no angst. He has no feelings of hatred towards you, nor do you of heat. And so you just got to go and forget that he has a mom and family, and you got to do what you got to do.
And,
look,
and
I'm sorry. I made a promise to my family I was coming home.
Yeah.
So I've been stabbed. I've been strangled. I almost had my eye put out. I've taken a four-minute beating from the guards for escaping from death row and handing myself back in. But they didn't care about that part.
Yeah.
They only cared about the fact that I escaped from death row, and I was on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted list for a month. So I had the nerve to come back and face my torture.
Escaped on the most wanted list. I looked at your Facebook page today, and there's a lovely picture of you and your bride. It looks like your wedding day.
Yeah, grateful.
What a tremendously beautiful new part of your life. You think you'll ever be able to put behind you the 21 years that you lost?
How do you? That doesn't matter anymore. Listen, this is the wonderful part. I'm sorry that the audience was brought in on the dark note, but the truth is that that's one of the great things about coming to the United States again after 9 years of living in England. And that's why my wife and I got married on January 16th, 2014, to celebrate my 10 years of freedom and survival and putting my life back together. And I've done quite well with it. I have a film coming out in January. And so many great people from the LA area are helping me launch my book here in the United States. And it's a great opportunity to share so much positivity. Why squander it? What happened yesterday? There's so many people who have a legitimate reason listening to this radio station that I don't have the right or an exclusive on my yesterday being dark. Everybody has to be shaped by whatever we've gone through. And I've decided to take a shape that I can show in love and dignity to others is meaningful. Otherwise, why come out?
It's such a compelling story, and there's so much more to it. Your book is called 7 Days to Live. It's in hardcover and paperback. It's available in the PhilHewlettAndFriends.com store. And some of the proceeds go to a worthy cause. Isn't that right?
Yes. So many wonderful people have been helped, and you'd be shocked, but 88 people were exonerated last year. I was the 140th death row prisoner set free and the 13th man proven innocent by DNA set free from DNA. And the combined years that the InnocenceProject.org has saved people is in the thousands. And Barry Scheck and Peter Neufeld have just graciously written me back very nice complimentary efforts. I want to help them, even though they didn't get a chance to help me, because people don't understand. I had to ask to be executed and actually to get free. In 2002, I was dying of hepatitis C infection in prison, and I decided to leave. I decided I had educated myself and grown as much as I can. Why squander it in misery in my last days? And it only worked to my advantage because the federal courts got involved, ordered the DNA testing, and 3 separate DNA results proved that I not only did it, but that there was 2 unidentified male DNA involved, and neither one of them matched me.
That is such a strange and compelling story that I think everybody should read. The book is available again in the store at PhilHewlettAndFriends.com. Nick Yaris, thank you very much, and I apologize. We have a limited amount of time to talk, but the book is called 7 Days to Live, and I can't even begin to imagine what he went through.
You can imagine that he didn't go in completely innocent,
no.
Right? He went in with some...
A checkered past.
Yeah. And once he got in there, he must have completely hardened. He must have grown a shell like a tortoise.
Yes.
Right? And then to come back out and try to get married and reassimilate into society and try to soften up again. I mean, how do you lighten up after that?
Yeah.
How do you laugh?
I mean,
you
hear
smile?
It just to talk about it, to be asked questions about it.
Oh, you could hear the shakiness in his voice. He was getting emotional, obviously.
That's right. Well, as we are known to do here on this program, we're going to do a complete U-turn next. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know we enjoy the craft beers. And those tasty brews can be especially delightful when paired with the aroma of the elephant enclosure at the LA Zoo. Well, you know, I'm not being completely fair here because up next, we're going to tell you about an exciting event at the zoo that does indeed involve craft brews. And you need to hear about it here next on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends on KFWB News Talk 980.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends, and that's a good thing because I'd hate to be just here talking to my friends in the studio. I need the friends out there in Friendland. Is that where you are today? Good. Jennifer Bjorklund is here. Jay Campidonia has the day off. The insane Daryl Wayne has been adeptly filling in as co-host today, as well as Chris Martin, always here with us. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thank you. We're looking for things to do all the time as well. And joining us live is Melissa Grossenbacher. She's the Associated Director or Associate Director of Special Events for the Greater Los Angeles Zoo Association. And she's here to tell us about something called Brew at the Zoo. Melissa, what exactly is this anyway?
Well, hi, Phil. Brew at the Zoo is our annual beer fest here at the LA Zoo, and it's really a lot of fun.
As fun as a whole bunch of monkeys getting loose at the zoo, I would think.
Exactly, exactly.
So is this it's separated from the animal enclosures in a certain area, or are you kind of mingling with the beasts?
Well, you know, it's a certain footprint of the zoo, so a portion of the zoo is open, and we have a bunch of the animals out. You know, you'll be able to see the elephants and the gorillas, the orangs, our lair exhibit, which are our amphibians, reptiles, et cetera, and our new Rainforest in the Americas exhibit.
Ooh. You know, the reptiles and the beer, that's such a good, that's a connection I make somehow.
Exactly.
I don't make a connection with the pachyderms, but with the reptiles. I think drinking beer and snakes and lizards, that makes a lot of sense to
me
somehow.
The iguana thing.
Yeah, is that what that is?
Yeah, the iguana thing. A lot of bars are named after iguanas for some reason.
It's that shifty eye.
Don't
forget about the Budweiser frogs.
Yep,
right.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
So how does this work? Is there a limit to the amount of beer you can inhale, or is it a one-ticket drinks all?
It's one ticket for all your drinks. It's basically unlimited samples. And we have a 4.5-ounce tasting glass that you just bring around to our more than 35 breweries.
These are all crafties, huh?
They are. Mm-hmm. We have lots of breweries from local and beyond. You know, Firestone Walker, Goose Island. We have Golden Road Brewery. The list goes on and on.
Now, you could get filled up on craft brew and not actually need to eat anything, but do you have some food that pairs with any of this?
We have lots of great food. We have street tacos. We have churros. I mean, who doesn't love a churro? We have soft pretzels. We have all sorts of great things to eat, popcorn, great stuff.
Here's a suggestion. Get a churro and order a black and tan and use it as a swizzle stick.
Good idea.
Mm. How about that? Huh? You like that, Jennifer? I'm always thinking. Always thinking. Now, the drunk people and the wild animals, will they mix?
No, which is why, you know, we make sure that everybody drinks responsibly and, you know, we make sure everybody stays in control of themselves the night of the event. We want people to have fun but not get too crazy.
Well, you have live bands playing as well, don't you?
We do. We have some great bands. We have the Juggernauts, which are a good old jug band. And they'll kind of grant people as they walk in.
They hit each other with jugs? How does that work?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'm not completely sure. Yeah, there's a washboard and a jug.
Oh, that sort of thing.
And they make music, and it's wonderful. And then we have Indian School, which is an awesome indie rock band. And we have the Spasmatics, which are an 80s cover band that they're pretty fantastic.
Do they cover the Plasmatics?
like Wendy O. Williams.
Yes, exactly. Maybe not. All right, so that's good. And the animals are all good with this?
The animals are good with it, yes, exactly. At some point, they do go to sleep. So, you know, the animals will be out earlier in the night, and then they'll kind of go into their night quarters for the evening. But the party continues even after they go to bed.
Now, Phil, if you could get drunk with any animal at the zoo, which animal would you pick as a drinking partner? I have to know.
It's one of two. I think a three-toed sloth would be a hoot.
Yeah.
Just hang around in the tree. But I think a white-handed gibbon might keep me on my toes.
So a monkey. You want to get drunk with a monkey.
I think so.
Yeah, okay. Just check it.
How about you, Chris? That's an excellent question.
Yeah, the monkeys seem like they'd be most active. They'd be the best drinking partners. I'd get down with a gorilla, too, as long as there was, like, some safe separation.
Well, I think that they would get silly. right? I mean, yeah. Sillier than they normally are.
Yeah, definitely. And so, Jennifer, how about you? Does this sound like a hoot to you?
Yeah, it sounds like the big cats. I'd hang with the big cats.
Wow.
Now, I live dangerously.
You're restricted from hanging out with them, right, Melissa? You can't go hang out with the tigers in this event, can you?
No, you cannot. But there's lots of, you know, to view them from a safe distance. There's plenty of opportunity for that.
Good. Now, when is this exactly?
This is this coming Friday, August 8th.
It's in the evening?
Yes, from 7 to 11 p.m.
And what's it take to get inside?
You know, basically we have tickets online, but please purchase them soon because they will sell out. It's $45 for general admission pre-sale and $50 at the door.
And you get the run of the zoo during the evening as well?
Exactly.
All right. We have a link to your website direct to the Brew at the Zoo page on our links page at philhewlettandfriends.com. So click on that in a hurry and get over there. Sounds like a party. Party like an animal. All right. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Brew at the Zoo this Friday night.
Combination of Busch Gardens and Jungle Land.
Yes, isn't it?
You have to figure that there's a lot of 20-somethings going in there with a flask in their back pocket anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, who's going? Well, on any typical day at the zoo. Jennifer, you have a zoo story for us, don't you?
I do. Actually, this one's funny. This 9-year-old kid who was at the Central Park Zoo with his family this weekend, he got separated from his mom and dad. And what do you think his reaction was? Do you remember being a little kid and not being able to find your parents and being scared and freaking out and all that stuff? I mean, I did. I got lost at Disneyland when I was little. This kid is lost for 2 hours in New York City. He said it was the greatest day of his life.
Yeah.
He left the zoo. He hung out in Times Square. Until, you know, police saw him by himself at the Port Authority bus terminal about a mile away.
Oh.
And they said, hey, kid, you know, what's up? And he says, hey, I can't find my parents. I guess he was trying to take the bus home or something. But the family was reunited. The dad clutched him tightly and was crying. And the mom was just panicking. And the kid told the Daily News, yeah, this was the greatest day of my life. And he got to go to the police station and ride in a police car. He had a great time.
Ooh.
It's away from home alone.
It is.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, just a little random tidbit for you. If you scrunched up all the islands of Japan, what do you think? Could you fit that into Connecticut?
Maybe.
Maybe? Yeah. A little larger than that.
Yeah. You have to trim off the edges.
Sure.
Especially the nuclear stuff. Just cut that out.
Japan has more 7-Eleven locations than any country in the world. At 16,000, that's twice as many as we have here in the United States.
It's like Hawaii and
ABC Market?
Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut. They have
thousands of them.
And
thousands
ABCs
of them.
Too, yeah.
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 You get that pineapple ham.
And Hilo Hattie.
You can't get a Hawaiian pineapple in Hawaii. That doesn't seem right, does it?
It is amazing to me, though, because I can't go a half a city block without seeing a 7-Eleven. Here in Southern California.
And there are twice as many as in Japan as there are in the entire United States.
Yeah. Maybe they're not as prevalent in the middle of the country.
Insane Daryl Wayne, a pleasure to have you here. It's inspiring, sir. I listened to you on the radio in my formative years. And to see you now and know that you continue on at K Tahoe and other stations across the country, it's just a pleasure and an honor to have you here, sir.
I survive. I'm like a radio cockroach.
Hey, we love your comments, cockroaches or not. We have an email address, feedback@philhewlettandfriends.com. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark. Brooke Peterson is our producer. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Mons. And for Jennifer Bjorklund, Jay Campedonia, Daryl Wayne and Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time when we call it As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.